Welcome to CI, Confronting the Issues, bringing a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today. And welcome to this edition of CI, Confronting the Issues, coming to you live from the Lower Fulton neighborhood of San Francisco, from the Leland Tea Company. And joining me on this St. Patrick's Day on today's program is my guest, John Alex Lowell, who is not only a member of my congregation, but a seminarian at Pacific School of Religion. And he's well-versed in today's topic, which is about accessibility in our houses of worship, or more accurately, the lack of accessibility in our houses of worship would probably be the most accurate statement. And as people are out celebrating the St. Paddy's Day, we want to take a moment and start thinking about really the purpose of this show and living our values out and taking time to think about our faith values, our faith traditions, and how we apply them to the issues and problems that we face today. And a figure that got me thinking about this, it was really startling to me that 20% of Americans, one in five, have some form of disability. Now, that doesn't mean that they need a ramp or they've got a walker or in a wheelchair, but some type of disability, and that we have to think past just ramping up for them. And so, as I've just briefly introduced my guest, we'll let him take a minute, talk a little bit more about himself, and how he got involved in this particular subject area. So, John Alex, would you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your involvement with this topic?
Yes. My name is John Alex Lowell, as the great Reverend Rishi Young introduced me. I am a member of First Congregational Church of San Francisco and currently a seminarian, a student at Pacific School of Religion, which is in Berkeley, California. It's part of the Graduate Theological Union Consortium, a.k.a. University, and my school is a college therein. In this seminary in fall semester 2006, I created the Differently Abled Student Union, comprised of seminarians and alumni who believe through personal experience in they having a disability, a family, a friend, or have some experience they've been affected by it, realize the religious body, the Corpus Christi, needs to open those spiritual, attitudinal, and structural doors that exist for people with disabilities to not be welcomed in. We're not commodities, but to become part of the church body. As Paul so eloquently describes, I can talk about that later on how Paul describes us in the body of the church.
And what brought you into this particular subject area? I know your story in having served with you in this congregation, but please feel free to tell us whatever you feel comfortable about what drew you or what sort of placed you in this topic or sensitive to this topic.
Yes, I have an amazing story to tell you of what happened to me almost 9 years ago. It was on Friday, March 23rd, a sunny midday point as I was out jogging here in San Francisco. I was in a good job at a good salary with a new boyfriend, and I was jogging out to look good. And little did I know is if I had proceeded up to an intersection with a traffic light and a pedestrian signal, and I saw that there was a white walk signal, I made a mistake. I erroneously assumed all the crossing cars on Mission Street had stopped. If I had looked before I had walked when I thought all the cars had stopped on the crossing Mission Street, I would have seen a red light running Mazda minivan coming straight towards me. It only came to me later when my family members quoted the cops, who witnesses reported to them what happened to me. The minivan hit me on my left side as I was proceeding westward. They were going north on Mission Street. I flung through the air. First, my left side of my head hit the windshield. And the police said that created a big spider web of broken glass with the plastic adhesive on it, keeping it all together. Then with the momentum, I flew, which is too happy of a word. I was flung 20 feet through the air and then landed on Mission Street. With momentum, I rolled, skid, scuffed, slid underneath a stationary bus. We call it here in San Francisco, Muni bus. And thankfully, others in the bus or around said, "Stop! Do not move the bus. There's somebody underneath the bus." Another car that was going in the same direction north with this person who had run the red light got out of their car. A couple, boy and girl at the time, they had since married, and I haven't spoken to them in many, many years. He, the driver, his first name Jordan, got out and waved cars around until the police or the ambulance arrived. And she, Isabella, got on her hands and knees and crawled underneath the bus. And there is a biomedical rule that she did not break. When you see a strewn, bloody body, first of all, don't touch the blood because of infection. You can also transmit infection to the blood and also get infected from the blood via any many viruses and bacteria. She did a tactile touch with my one set of fingers that was not bloody, and that was all she could do because I had a brain injury. I had, on my right side of my head where I had landed, I had cracked bones. And already within minutes, the swelling had started to occur. And when you get a bruise, it swells because extra blood, tissue, and liquid are going into it. That is what was happening to my head. Then the police arrived and took me to San Francisco General Hospital, which is for here in San Francisco City County and the north, San Mateo County, is our trauma center hospital, where you go if you're shot, you've been stabbed, you've been run over, they take you there. I was admitted into ER. Then the doctor, Martin Holland, as I would later hear his name and what he told my family members, he did a removal of the bone fragments in my skull in which to help brain mass survive because it was swelling so much, and I was so cracked in my head, I like that phrase, cracked in the head. It was easy. Didn't have to do a drill down, just a removal with pliers of the bone fragments. Then he later told my parents that was the most amount of skull fragments he had ever removed. His name is Dr. Martin Holland. He has since joined the Navy SEALs and does state side cranioplasty and craniectomies on veterans from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, because many of those soldiers over there from the IEDs are getting brain trauma. Traumatic brain injury is what I have and what they have and what this doctor who helped me in my moment of need did. So thus, I went after that hospital to five more hospitals in San Francisco, in which I received many treatments, had many doctors, and got infections many times. I had pneumonia several times. I had in my body, on every appendage that I have, not my sexual one, my torso, my head, each arm and leg, fingers, I have scars. Both trade scars and surgery scars from IVs, feeding tubes, tracheotomies, such. I also in the hospital, there is an odd photograph I saw, which I will briefly describe. It was me, I was cognizant, looking at the camera. I had my fingers in the air with a victory sign, and it was me looking at the camera with part of my head missing. My skull had not been, a prosthetic had not been yet inserted. That is called a cranioplasty. The material they put in was a form of plastic. So that was inserted, and then I had went through what's called mental and physical rehabilitation to help me understand who I was, where I was, and for those parts of my body, because I was still for so long in the hospital bed, my muscles shrank. You don't use it, it goes away. Well, it doesn't go away, it shrank on me. So I had to go through some work with physical therapists on how to rebuild muscle mass in my legs and arms so I could safely walk. It's through this that I of what how another I was a physical deformity, I had a disability. It's up for debate. I don't know if we have the time for if what I have is a mental or a physical disability, because it was a physical thing, an event, an accident in which I was hit by a sitting Mazda minivan going north on Mission that caused me to get a condition that is now called a mental disability. I have missing memory. Some of my senses, nerve damage in my nose. I cannot smell that well anymore. And my capacity to retain information, which is only told to me by spoken words, if the listeners are hearing spoken words, it is said only such. John, go here, turn left, jump over here, then count to 20 backwards in Aramaic, and then go buy in kilograms some flour and mix it in pounds with some brown organic sugar from Cala Grocery, the corner of High Street in California. Of course, what I just said is BS, but that equates to what was standard information I was given. It did not stick like glue. In earrings and out the other is when I recall something about High Street, and there's something about flowers. Was it a pretty flower on High Street? I think that was part of the story. I equated to that 7 years ago.
So today, you're a student of seminary. You've come a long way since the accident. But I think it brings up an interesting point about differently abled people, and when we're talking about accessibility, especially in places of worship. I am disabled in a different manner. I had a stroke, and so I now use a walker. And so when I talk about ramps and things, those are important to me because of physical limits. And although my memory is still pretty good, not as good as it was before my stroke, but what it brings up is that in most communities of faith, issues of accessibility come up as members have a need or they encounter it directly. And so it's not on the radar screen until a member has an accident, or in my case, a member has a stroke and as a walker, or in the case of a John Alex member comes to our congregation with their needs and different stories. So it really comes down in many communities to that direct access or need because they're presented with it by a member, and it's not really on their broader radar screen to think of in a more proactive sense. And I think what we're moving towards, and John Knox, you can correct me if my perception is not correct on this, but John Knox just helped coordinate a conference on this very subject at the School of Religion just this past Friday,
yes,
the 12th of March. And I believe, although I was not present at the conference, but I believe that much of the thrust of this was to begin to get it more on our faith community's proactive radar screen so we can start thinking of it a little bit ahead or beyond just reacting to someone in our congregation, but being able to look at it a little more proactively and how can we open up, how can we become more accessible and more open to people who may have a variety of issues, not even mine is physical accessibility. It could be a hearing. It could be sight. It could be just the way they perceive learning. Maybe they're
a sensory disability, yeah.
That, you know, maybe they need things presented in a different way. Maybe they're more visual or more audio or however that may present itself, or maybe dyslexic. I mean, there's a host of possibilities out there. And so I believe that part of the emphasis is beginning to think proactively about that in our faith communities, but also understanding that it is, as we say, not just a ramp to be ready for people who are differently abled, but it's also a way of breaking down the isolation for those of us with some form of disability, because I notice it. I walk down the street in my walker, and if I'm in a store, people pull little children next to their side and pull them away like the walker is contagious or something. Or keep them away, we become the other, as John so eloquently stated a few moments ago. And so part of all of our faith traditions, regardless of what they are, one of the aims, at least stated aims of most faith traditions, is to break down those kinds of stereotypes or barriers and to be open and accessible to people, especially people who may already be adherents or at least interested in that faith tradition, who for some way or another cannot enjoy or partake of the life of that community because the place is not accessible, they can't read the documents, they can't understand the sermon or songs on a Sunday morning, whatever the issue may be. So is that pretty accurate about the conference on the 12th, or am I off base?
You are correct. We did focus in our current added seminary, so we were talking specifically on how we are educating the students who will be ministers. They are in certain capacities at the moment, but when they are called to parish, to diocese, to chapel, to cathedrals, or to urban ministries, we're involved, Risha and I, our churches, in several urban ministries for people who are homeless, how they will work with people with disabilities. Understanding that word I used to use, with, not to be a component of doing things for people with disabilities, but to educate them, to realize, help them realize they're human beings. That what you talked about is accessibility. There was a reverend who did the blessing at the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was signed 20 years ago on July 26, 1990. It is George Herbert Walker Bush, George Bush Sr., in my opinion, the one good thing he did. He was the president who signed it. He asked United Church of Christ Reverend Harold H. Wilkie to give the interfaith blessing at this ceremony. Harold Wilkie went up and he gave the blessing, of which he was awarded the signing pen by Bush in recognition for what he had just done. And Harold Wilkie was born without arms. He was born without arms, and he is written in a book, look it up in the library, Creating a Caring Congregation. He describes what his mother was offered by the friendly birth doctor. This is in 1914, up in New England. At that point, abortions were illegal. But the birth doctor said, look at the pronouns I'm using. I'm quoting verbatim. It has no arms. Do you want me to do something with it? That it means kill it, or put it in a dump, or somehow let people vagabond pick it up. No, she said, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. She raised it such with empowering love. Harold Wilkie went on to Union Seminary, of which a hero of mine, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, taught and studied there, some years apart. He did some great work. They may have been students at the same time, in the late 30s. It's oddity. I can't find that yet, but I would like to determine that. Harold Wilkie went on to later found some groups working with people with disabilities, and he later in life said, a ramp is not enough. That was the title of the conference, Risha, we had, A Ramp is Not Enough. And that is a description of what some places believe makes your building accessible to people who are disabled. And that is, there's some errors in that statement, and then I have a preference in his term, the disabled, but the concept is the ramp. That is for people, such as Risha described with her walker she uses from her stroke, people with physical disabilities, and how they get up into the building. There are steps. The many churches and government buildings did have, particularly some still do, but government buildings after the ADA, the acronym for the Americans with Disabilities Act, had to put in ramps, lifts, and elevators. A mandate. Must. However, accessibility needs to be provided, as Risha described, particularly for people with other types of disabilities, in particular, mental disabilities, which, as an amendment 2 years ago from Senator Republican Orrin Hatch and Senator Aaron Harkins, who helped write the Americans with Disabilities Act, expanded the conditions which qualify for disabilities, including more neurological conditions, such as ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, and bipolar, which were previously considered illnesses and disorders, but did not mandate that thus, if you have ADD and dyslexia, there are certain aspects of light and sound that is disruptive, that you can expect that you receive it in a steady pace of information rather than the phenomenon we live in our modern world, and doing what's called a generalization. There's a trillion things going on, zip, zap, zip, zap, and we can somehow momentarily dissect what is relevant and to dismiss the others. When you have hypersensitivity to light, sound, and other sensory intake mechanisms, and you, because of a mental disability, you need to say, I have different aspects of accessibility that I request under, in particular, the term we use under the Americans with Disabilities Act in labor law, it's called accommodation. I wish to have, when I work in this office, not have overhead radio on while I am on the computer, because that sound wave, because of my hearing loss, it's at a particular tone. And when I hear that tone of voice from the radio wave frequency, it disrupts my hearing aid, and it does not work. I cannot function. So can you turn that off, please?
So what we see in all of this, we see a couple of things. first we see a narrow definition of disability or differently abled. We think because we've been sort of tuned with ADA and we've seen on our various buildings, or maybe even buildings we're involved with, the addition of ramps and things like that to get into the building. So we tend to think about that. So that's also tend to narrow our definition down to those types of physical disabilities that warrant it, like my walk or people in wheelchairs. Or what I encountered was many buildings, they had the ramp to enter the building, but you still had stairs and stuff inside. I couldn't gain access to anything but the ground floor inside. So I could get into the building but not move within it. And so the law addresses that, but I think part of what we want our faith communities to do is get past the law and get into more advocacy and being sensitive to it. So we're not just responding like everyone else has to a law, but to actually a higher law of love and inclusion, of being sensitive to these people, opening up our houses of faith to people who want to contribute and want to be part of that community, and people who are just as worthy and just as included in the divine love and consideration as any one of the rest of us. Plus, I think an implicit kind of warning in this is that right now we're talking about 20% of Americans. As we look at an aging baby boomer class, I believe that's going to rise. That just with effects of age, just things like sight, hearing, things we typically associate with degeneration of age, now as we live longer, or become issues that we need to take into account in our faith communities, in our organizations, and really all aspects of our social culture, because it imparts how we communicate information, how we communicate not only necessary information, but, you know, spiritual and comforting information as well. And we are coming up to our first break, and so before we get too tied up into another conversation area, let's take this as a breaking point here.
Yes.
And so we're going to take a four-minute break, so we will see you all back here in 4 minutes.
Hi, this is Niles McClower for the new show, Why Life Is, right here on Friday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Now on BBS Radio, Why Life Is answers a vast number of questions and explores the demystifying of metaphysics and spirituality. Just a fraction of what we will cover are such subjects as detailed explanations of the afterlife, what the meaning of life is, and what intelligent life is like in other worlds. This is the show many of you have been waiting for to hear and participate in as well. Why Life Is has been on the air broadcasting for nearly 3 years and is now available on BBS Radio in prime time on Friday nights at 7 p.m.
Welcome to the Church of Total Acceptance. If you're a divorced single parent, press 1 now. Goodbye. Welcome to the Church of Total. If you're gay or lesbian, press 2 now. Goodbye. Welcome to. If you're overweight, have a mullet, or anything polyester, press 3 now. Goodbye.
God doesn't filter people out, neither do we. The United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. The United Church of Christ, where God is still speaking.
If you have a bumper sticker on your car, question authority, or otherwise think for yourself, please hang up now and have a nice day.
The United Church of Christ. To find the congregation that's right for you, go to ucc.org.
Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate? Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution, if you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
And we're back live with this edition of CI Confronting the Issues, coming to you live from the Leland Tea Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco. On this beautiful St. Patrick's Day, I'm sure many of you are out and about either seeing the green or drinking green beer, but we hope that you take a break and give a listen to us today. We're talking about accessibility in places of worship, and basically that a ramp is not enough. That it's not just building a ramp into your church to guarantee accessibility, that it's a much broader topic than that. And joining me today is my guest, John Alex Lowell, a member of my congregation at First Congregational Church, a seminarian at Pacific School of Religion, and also the leader of differently abled students at the GTU, or Graduate Theological Union, which Pacific School of Religion is part of, and who also coordinated a conference this past Friday on this very same subject with faith leaders and disability advocates within faith communities coming together to talk about this very issue of accessibility in our houses of worship, and also talking about the film A Place for All, which is a video produced talking about this subject, and not just with Christian congregations, but from Jewish and Muslim, a very ecumenical perspective, and it shows some wonderful stories and really should expand our ideas about what accessibility is and what we need to think about to be a little more proactive in this as we go forward. So as we go... And we're back live with this edition of CI Confronting the Issues. I have to apologize, we had a little technical glitch there, but we dropped off. We are back now, and thanks to my wonderful engineer support in Paradise that we're able to get that covered, so you got to hear either some music or other material and didn't get dead air, as we used to call it in broadcast. But as we're coming back to this part of the program, I was mentioning a video called A Place for All, which is an ecumenical video talking about accessibility in places of worship, and hopefully expanding our vision of that. But I wanted to get from John Alex Lowell, my guest today, his perspective on what he found in searching the Holy Text, in our case, the Christian Holy Text, relating to this and the inclusion of differently abled or people who might be considered the other into our faith community. John Alex?
Yes. Thank you, Risha. what I would like to mention are two stories of what Jesus does in the Gospel of Matthew. It is the first of the four, the Synoptic Gospel. It is Jesus walking along, and many people are on the roadside wanting to be healed. There is a person who is there named Bartimaeus, and he wants to see. He says, when others are saying, "Why are you here?" "I'm blind and I want to see." They tell him to shut up. The people want their ailments healed, and they don't want his ailments. They believe in Jesus, but they don't believe that others should be healed. That is a spectrum we need to step away from in the religious community. That's in Matthew 2. Up in Matthew 10, there is, as Jesus is walking along, and some Pharisees have gathered, and he is on Sabbath. He knows of a person who needs to be healed. He is a quadriplegic. And Jesus gathers into a house, and it's tight, tight, tight. The quadriplegic has some friends who break a hole in the house for him, the person to be lowered into the house. Jesus heals this person and says, "Stand up and walk." And through those words of Jesus, he does stand up. And then it gets into some acrimony with the Pharisees of what is Jesus doing on the Sabbath. That's a whole story. It's prevalent throughout the Gospels. This is my rationale for bringing these two stories, is here are people who believe in Jesus doing good for someone who has a physical condition we call a disability. That is the person with quadriplegia. And the first instance was someone who is blind. And it is Jesus who's able to speak here through the little petty squabblers standing around Bartimaeus and says, "Step forth, I hear you, what do you want?" "I want to see." "It is your faith that has made you see." And he becomes, as many of the 61 instances of Jesus doing healings in the Gospels, the four books, he goes to become a disciple. So he expands beyond the first little 12 to go and become a disciple. So that is what Jesus did. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, also called St. Paul of Tarsus, he was formerly called Saul. He was a Pharisee priest who had an experience on the road to Damascus where he saw the vision of Christ appear to him, as others would say he was blinded for 3 days. And Bartimaeus could heal him when he would proceed up to Damascus, where he had been sent to do a witch hunt by Caiaphas to find other Jesus believers there. He did, was given a choice of, "Please, Jesus," he asked him, "could you go and talk to the Gentiles?" And that concept, that word, let's do a brief check-in, the book, the Funken Wagnalls from Laugh-In, it was those who were not Jewish. So it was an astounding moment in Christianity when any person could become a believer in Jesus. And this is what Jesus didn't say, "Do it because I say so." He asked him, "Would you?" And that is the call to ministry, the question. We, who have ministerial calling, are responding to what God has offered us in saying, "Yes, God, I will do it. It is my will you gave me to respond." So Paul learned so much in his ministry, and in his letters he wrote, called Epistles to the cities in Greece, who often are similar to what we experience today, as squabblers, people saying, "I said, she said, we said, they said, I say, blah, 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 blah." He was writing to a city in Corinth. It was one of the island cities in Greece, right south of Athens, which was the little Greco center point city. He wrote to them, and he was describing in 1 Corinthians, that's what the book is called. There's a 2 Corinthians letter, epistle. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 12 through 26. Paul engages in what he was famous for in his writings, rhetorical questions and uses of metaphors. He roughly says, and this is not a verbatim, a paraphrase I give forth, I describe now the body of Christ. We are organs in the body of Christ. If all the ears, if all were a nose, how could we hear? We're all different organs in the body of Christ. Some are weak and some are strong. The weak need the strong and the strong need the weak. It says up in verse 26, if one is suffering, all are suffering in the body of Christ. If one is glorified, all are glorified. He is describing the church body. As we are in a church body, he is describing the little pretty cathedral here in San Francisco.
So this is goes, even in the Christian faith, is not the only faith, but this is consistent with faith doctrine throughout the spectrum of many different faith traditions, Jewish, Islamic, many of the New Age traditions, many of the naturist traditions, or even some of the older pagan traditions, of inclusiveness, that you meet people where they're at, that you don't ask them to change before you encounter them. You know, well, you know, you can come, but it's not a faith of waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it's a faith of inclusion. And that inclusion means people that we look at today as differently able. And understanding that viewpoints today are a little different than they might have been 1,000 years ago, and sometimes not as different as we may like to believe. For instance, in Jesus' time, the dominant thought that if you were crippled, disabled, something like that, some issue where you weren't physically perfect or, you know, matched to what they thought in AKC standards for pets would be called show standard. If you weren't up to that show standard of humanity, something wrong with you. You'd sinned, you'd done something bad, or your parents had done something bad. And I believe to a degree that attitude carries forward today in the 21st century that those of us who are differently abled, that there's something wrong with us. It happened to us because we did something wrong. It happened to us because our faith wasn't deep enough. To those in Christian circles, what I call the blab it and grab it, name it and claim it people, that you're sick because your faith isn't strong enough. I had my stroke because I did something wrong back 20 years ago or something that God didn't like. And we just, frankly, most of us in the more progressive and liberal just don't buy that. And our interpretation of Scripture and the ministry of Jesus and what we see in the apostles after Jesus and carried out in Jesus' ministry does not support that. That we believe that inclusion is really the testimony and the action that we see here. And so the challenge before us is really being, how can we be or practice and demonstrate that inclusiveness as we look at the startling figure of 20% of us having some type of disability. That means get 5 of your friends, get 6 of your friends together, gather them together at your next family picnic or your next barbecue or going out to the ball game or whatever you're doing, and you have 5 more of you together. If there's 5 of you, 1 of you has some type of disability. Think of that. So if you gather most families, you have an uncle, 3 or 4 of you together, a few of you going out to see a game or something, there's probably at least 5 or 6 of you together. Statistically, that tells us 1 of you has some kind of disability. May not be obvious, may not be visible, but something that impacts your ability to perceive information, your ability to function in all levels. And so how do we begin to address that? How can we positively address that? And I believe a big key to that is just, again, openness and dealing with fear that is not contagious. Just because someone's disabled, if we touch them, we're not going to get the disability. My eyes aren't going to fall out. If I shake hands or hug John Alec, my brain isn't going to go haywire. If someone comes up and asks me a question about my walk or a little child or something, they're not going to all of a sudden have neuro deficits in their left side and need a walker. That's not going to happen. So we can be inclusive,
yes.
But also the step further then is how do we communicate our willingness to be open and accepting to a wider community so that we can invite the differently abled in and let them become active, vibrant parts of our faith communities, because many of them want and can be that, and many are.
Yes, as you said, invite in, Risha, that is a training mechanism that many ministries have developed. The denominations have developed ministries on how to train ushers. For you have coming into a church, I'm creating a scenario. If someone's in a wheelchair, and they're being pushed by someone, it's not a motorized one, and the usher would speak only and look only at the person who is standing behind the person in the wheelchair and saying, "Welcome to our church. Right over there is a place for him. Right in the back, you can be placed." And to speak only, and this is a form of not recognizing the person who is in the wheelchair as a person by not even looking at the person in the wheelchair, only doing eye contact, doing gracious little movie steward, usher help by, "Yes, may I help you with this," with the person who's standing. No, it is two individuals who come in, and the person on the chair is not a commodity. The person is a valid soul in a vessel,
yes.
A temporal body.
Recognizing value and worth. And I warned you earlier that the second half of this goes really fast and has gone fast. We're at our second break time already.
Yes, indeed.
And so we're getting set now for our second break, 4-minute break. And so we will see you back here in 4 minutes.
Yes.
Welcome to the Church of Total Acceptance. If you're a divorced single parent, press 1 now. Goodbye. Welcome to the Church of Total... If you're gay or lesbian, press 2 now. Goodbye. Welcome to... If you're overweight, have a mullet, or anything polyester, press 3 now. Goodbye.
God doesn't filter people out. Neither do we. The United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. The United Church of Christ, where God is still speaking.
If you have a bumper sticker on your car, question authority, or otherwise think for yourself, please hang up now and have a nice day.
The United Church of Christ. To find the congregation that's right for you, go to ucc.org.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Gosh darn, boss, we got this here radio, but we ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go into town and get some for the both of us.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Dagnabbit, you and your BBX radio.
Over my head when I get sleepy, I go to my bed. Whoa, whoa, yeah, yeah. Wake up in the morning, get in my car, put the heater on, eat my breakfast bar. I got everything. Change my cell phone ring. Move late when I please, give valet my keys, pour a coffee, drink, get paid just to think. What more do I want? Should I give or flaunt? Lunchtime was to eat hot steak or sushi. I can eat either one, doesn't matter to me. While I have it good, if I should, I would. After work, what to do? Watch my plasma TV, take a dip in my pool, or just be lazy. This is the life. No fuss, no strife. What about the man on the street? He had no food to eat, no shoes on his feet. Looked like he was beat, nothing on it was neat. A person he'd like to meet. Do I really need all that I have? Well, if I don't need all that I have, what should I do? Won't you give me a clue? Won't you turn on your big TV? Then you'll see. There are some out there with no food to eat, no shoes on their feet, nor no place to sleep. You see, disaster hits. Nature threw a fit. In his eyes, he I one, no one better than the other. If you think otherwise, go and cry to your mother. It's time to do. Chase away the blues. One step at a time, no need for hurry. Take a step back amongst this scurry. Thank you for this day. Oh, come what may. Now the man who was on the street, he's got food to eat, shoes on his feet, he's dressed nice and neat, got a place to sleep, and he's holding his head up high. You see, you really never needed all that you had.
Back to you live from the Leland Tea Company in San Francisco with this edition of CI, Confronting the Issues, on this beautiful St. Patrick's Day. And our topic today has been the accessibility of our communities of faith and our houses of worship. Joining me has been John Alex Lowell, an associate, a member of my home congregation, First Congregational Church of San Francisco. Is also a seminarian or ministerial student at the Pacific School of Religion, which is part of the Graduate Theological Union, a consortium of small seminary schools that kind of share administrative costs in order to streamline their operating costs and basically stay in operation for each of their respective faith traditions. And he also helped coordinate a seminar on this topic this past Friday. And at this time, we're coming up towards the closing minutes of the program. So I would ask him really quickly if he has any closing thoughts on this subject, which is could go on for a lot more hours in this 55 minutes. But give us a few seconds of closing thoughts here.
Some closing thoughts is we are all parts of the body of the church, and we all need to hear testimony of those religious bodies that are
not, let's step away from the word accepting and allowing in, but welcoming in. You are part of the church. You are part of the synagogue. You are part of the mosque. And that is exactly what people will hear tonight. When at our church, that we should remember of, we will be airing a documentary that was produced, released in early December, called A Place for All, Faith and Communities for Persons with Disabilities. This feature is 60 minutes long, interviews with clergy who are from Christian churches, mosques, from Islam, and then also Judaism. Several rabbis and baruchs are speaking how in their ministry was affected by it being hearing impaired condition, also called being deaf, and viewing American Sign Language. And interviews with parishioners, members of churches, how in a Roman Catholic church, two sisters who have a muscular condition where they use wheelchairs were allowed, and it's still a criticism I have, which I won't get into, how it's an allowance given, but no, it's a privilege to those who are in wheelchairs, have many robes on to be ushers for a church service in a large Catholic church. So this is all featured in this documentary, including a church in Pennsylvania, Church of the Deaf for Christ the King, where it is all in. There is some spoken word. It's the spouse of the minister doing spoken word of which it's all done in American Sign Language.
I think you'll find those of you who are in the San Francisco area, please feel free to come by at 7 p.m. to First Congregational Church to see this film. We're at the corner of Bush and Polk Street.
There will be subtitles.
Subtitles and also snacks provided for those who come. But for those of you in other locations, I would say first try to become aware and open your awareness up of people with that are differently able with various disabilities, not just the obvious things of wheelchairs and walkers, but things like hearing, sight, and also consider that as our population ages, that some of these areas are going to increase with our very own neighborhoods, our very own brothers and sisters in our congregations. And so it's time to start taking a look at this from the practical standpoint of our own congregations as they exist now, but also looking at this as a key to church growth, that if we have this many people who cannot access our communities or our houses of worship, that think of the growth in just being able to invite these people back. Because they're willing, they want to be part of it, but just can't think of it when they're able to come back to a house of worship that they basically believe in and support. That can be a huge area of church growth, not to sound peddling or salesman-like on this, but there are lots of positive ramifications to this, but also just to be people that are open, and people of the 21st century are aware that life has changed and the world has changed since the world that we knew even 20 years ago or 5 years ago. And for those of us that have some type of disability or have some type of challenge, be it physical or mental, in how we perceive data or how we need to have data presented, this is important to us.
Yes.
Very important to us, because our faith is a strong part of our lives. And so I want to thank, as we get into the close of our program, I want to thank my guest, John Alex, for being here today and taking time out of his schedule to join us for this program.
And I want to thank Risha Young for inviting me to come here to give some spoken words to that which we all are experiencing in our lives, of how people with disabilities are part of society, and to not feel it is us against them. It's a false duality to say it is them and me.
They are all part of us.
Yes.
They are all us-ins.
Yes, very
us-ins. And I'd like to thank my engineers, Seth and Dawn, up in Paradise, for getting us past our couple of glitches today, but also always doing a great job of keeping this program going.
Kudos
and,
to you.
And also the regular supporters of this program. John Alex is a regular supporter. Ken Tipton, Dan Diaz, my friends with Lower Polk Neighbors are all regular supporters and help this program exist and stay on the air. And I really have a great program coming up in the middle of April. I know it's a horrible time to think about taxes, but I have Dr. Kolb, who is one of the doctors who really helped lead the way in dealing with the negative effects of silicon breast implants. But she's talking about a new holistic way of medicine and spirituality looking in this new century, and addition or inclusion of the feminine in the divine. I think that's going to be a great program coming up on April 14th. And so as the clock winds up to a close here and finally catches up with us here, we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And thank you. And go enjoy. Happy St. Paddy's Day. You have been listening to CI, Confronting the Issues. For comments or questions on this or any CI program, contact us via the web at www.myciradio.com. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young. Join us for the next edition of CI right here on the BBS Radio Network, Channel 2.